Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this Corner Office podcast. We're going to get a little meta here, so bear with me. Chances are the device you're using to listen to this episode, it's probably using Wi-Fi to stream or download. And depending on wherever you are, yes, you, wherever you are right at this very moment, you might be on a Boingo wireless network. My guest for today is David Hagen. He has been with Boingo since 2001. Boingo is one of the rare tech companies based in Los Angeles, so we went out to see him, and he gave us the tour.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Yeah, so this is the lobby of Boingo headquarters. And when I heard that you wanted to do the interview and walk around the office, I was excited because the office really tells the Boingo story.
Yeah.
So let's talk
do
about
that.
So you walk in, as you guys did this morning, and you see the Network Operations Center. So it's the heartbeat of the company, and it says what we do, right? We build, design, operate wireless networks in major venues. So as you walk in, and any guest that comes into the lobby, they see the heartbeat of the company is that we build and operate networks. So that was fundamental. That's why we put it there. And then the second thing you see is conference room over here called Soldier Field, the conference room that we just walked out of called World Trade Center. So what does that say? We're in the venue business.
Very good.
Right? So we get long-term wireless rights at major venues. Then we design, build, and operate these wireless networks.
Does it make you crazy that if I say Boingo to a lot of people, they're going to go, oh, man, those guys in the airports?
No, not at all. I actually get, are you Gogo in the airports?
Oh, yeah, right.
And so I describe we're the fast guys in the airports. They're the slower guys in the airplanes.
That's a little bit of Wi-Fi shade right there.
Yeah, right. But I actually don't, because people know us as a brand from the airport experience. And most people now get online in airports with Boingo for free.
Yep.
So people like it.
Yeah. But it's interesting because that's not the core of your business now, is it?
It's about 20% of our business. Most people know us as that. That's how we built the brand. And we went from that strength and then went into a lot of different types of venues. Mm-hmm. So sports arenas, as we talked about, World Trade Center, military bases. We've built out over 60 military bases.
When did you realize that you had to sort of change gears a little bit?
So we went public in 2011. Mm-hmm. And we were largely a for-pay service in airports. And our airport partners wanted to go free. So they wanted free internet access, free Wi-Fi. And so we realized we're going to have to change the way we do things. We couldn't just survive on a pay-per-drink or subscription business in the airports. That we needed to go into many more types of venues and also figure out how to monetize a free service.
The whole ad-supported thing in the airports wasn't doing it for you?
Well, that's what we went to.
Yeah.
So before that, there were no ads in the airports. So when
you just had straight-up pay. That's true, actually, when you think
about
it.
It was just pay, right? It was a credit card
and
business.
And we were all cursing you, yeah.
Yeah, right. So people got a lot happier when we went to a free model that we monetized through advertising.
It's funny, actually, now. Wi-Fi is basically supposed to be free. I mean, it just is.
It's certainly the expectation.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Does that make you crazy?
No, because we figured out how to monetize it.
Yeah.
Right? So we created an advertising business, and then we went into other types of venues, and we figured out other ways to monetize. So we have advertising. We have partners pay us for access. So if you're a American Express Platinum Card customer, you get a year free of Boingo. So another way to monetize that free network is American Express pays Boingo to their cardholder base. It's free. We have a deal with Sprint where they pay us for access to that network, where for their end consumer, it's free. So we still are in the same business of building and operating Wi-Fi networks, but the monetization strategy around those networks has changed dramatically.
You've been here 16 years, right?
I have, yeah.
What was it like in Wi-Fi land in 2001? Take us back there, would
you? Yeah, so no smartphones, no tablets. Most PCs did not have a Wi-Fi chip inside. You actually had to go buy the $100
card, the
big honking Wi-Fi card. So it was a very different business. I think our original retail plan, which now sells for $9.95 a month in the airports for subscription, I think it was $79.99.
Well, there's a thing on the wall over there, 2001. Boingo was born, $74.95.
There you go,
$74.95. Like, are you kidding me, $75?
We were very proud of the service. But it was a different time, right? So being able to hold up your laptop, not have it connected to any no cords, no wires, but connected to the internet was mind-blowing. And again, we launched before Wi-Fi chips were in laptops. We launched, before it was even called Wi-Fi. It was still 802.11b.
Wow.
Yeah. Sheesh. So it was a different time. different time.
Is there other stuff we should see? Because we can stand here and talk all day.
But. Yeah, let's all keep walking. So hopefully the marine layer will burn off. We're going to go up the stairs.
Yeah, you got the view outside, that's for sure.
And so the view is pretty amazing. And so part of the goal with the architect partners that we use is we have this amazing canvas. Let's just maximize it and don't screw it up, frankly, right? Like, leverage the views. So you'll see that we put the offices that we do have, which are relatively small, on the inner core, and we kept the light and the view for everybody else.
So actually, tell us about this space, who these folks are. Obviously, there's the mandatory tech company kitchen over there.
Yes. So this is called the cafe. It's the second story. We walked up this amazing staircase, and this is really the community center of the company. You see over to my left, every employee has a photo on the wall. Over to the right, we have our values. So we talk about culture at Boingo a lot. And then, of course, you have the food center. So
gotta have
you've got to have free food in the tech world. You've got to have salty snacks. You've got to have fresh fruits and vegetables, and we have all of that. And then at lunch, you'll see these tables are largely filled. So it, you know, gives people a place where they can leave their workspace and come and be part of the community.
Do the employees get to pick their own picture up there?
You can tell, yes. We have some that don't look like people at all. They look like dogs. So,
and then there's the glamour shots. Yes,
they have whatever they want.
Yeah. What's it like running a tech company not in Silicon Valley?
It's fantastic. It used to be viewed as a challenge that running a tech company in LA, it might be hard to get engineers, it might be hard to recruit the right kind of talent. That's completely changed. You know, now with Silicon Beach and all of the technology companies that are here, there's a ton of talent. And I think it's an opportunity where we can really stand out because we're LA-based, where if you're in Silicon Valley, you're one of many, many thousands of tech companies. So I think actually recruiting and retention is easier here.
Who's your competition in this space, both for people and then for customers too?
Yeah, so for customers, so you got to go back to our business strategy. It's acquire the long-term wireless rights at major venues. So when we compete to win a venue, it's mostly companies you're not going to know, but tower companies.
Mm-hmm. Cell phone tower companies,
Tower companies we compete against. Occasionally, we'll compete against one of the telcos. Occasionally, we'll compete against smaller kind of technology integration companies. But typically, they're not well-known brands, which really helps us. We go in, talk to a venue, say we're Boingo, and they're like, oh, I know you guys. Right. You have wireless networks in airports.
We should probably clarify here the idea of you selling and working in venues. What are you talking about? When you say venues, what does that mean? Is that sports stadiums? Is it the Rose Bowl? What is it?
So it's major venues where you have a lot of people congregating, where cellular service typically is weak, largely because you have so many people trying to access a network. So airports, transportation hubs. We talked about the World Trade Center in New York. That's one of our venues. Sports arenas. We're in Soldier Field. We're in Phillips Arena in Atlanta. We're in Vivint Arena in Salt Lake City where the Jazz play. We're in military bases where cellular coverage is typically very poor for our soldiers. So any type of venue where you have a lot of people congregating and you need to provide better service, that's a place where we want to get a long-term contract for wireless rights, typically 10-plus years. And then we build and then monetize the networks depending on what the venue wants to do with the network.
Without getting too technical, how does it work?
How does it work?
Yeah.
So we literally will design both Wi-Fi and these things called distributed antenna systems, DAS, which are cellular extensions. So we go into an environment, let's say it's a stadium, we figure out how many people are going to be. If it's an NBA arena, it's 18,000 people when it's jammed. And we have to design the network to handle that kind of load. So when LeBron dunks and everybody goes crazy and they're taking a video of it and then posting it on social media, we have to have a network that can handle that kind of volume at peak. And the biggest challenge is then designing it within a venue that doesn't mess with the beautiful look, design, architecture of the venue. The venues are typically quite concerned about, we don't want to just hang, you know, transmission equipment anywhere. So it's a major challenge. If it's an open air venue, then you can't put anything above. So that's a challenge. So, you know, the different types of venues have different characteristics that we have to design around.
And the venue then pays you to do this, and that's how you're making your money.
So typically the venue will give us long-term rights. They may pay us to operate a network. We may get paid from, we talked about the cellular carriers may pay us, partners like American Express, we signed a deal with MasterCard where they're doing the same kind of thing for their loyalty program. So we are very good at figuring out different ways to monetize the network depending on what the venue wants to do with it.
It's interesting. You know, I said a minute ago, Wi-Fi ought to be free, but somebody's paying.
Somebody's absolutely paying. You can't provide it for free, yeah. Right? You have to figure out how to monetize the network. Consumer wants it for free. As long as we can figure out a way for someone else to pay for that, then everybody wins.
Yeah. How did you wind up here?
So I started out in the advertising business. So I was in the ad agency business when I first got out of school back in the 80s. And one of my clients was a predecessor to Sprint, United Telecom. So they were a client. Then they ended up hiring me in their marketing group. And then I transitioned from United Telecom over to Sprint. I ended up launching the Sprint brand in Canada in 1994 when deregulation hit. And then my family and I, we were in Canada for 5 years. And we decided we wanted to come back to the U.S. I really wanted to get into the internet. So I'd been doing wireline telecom. And this is, you know, late 90s when the internet was really just going crazy. So I took a job in L.A. with Ticketmaster Online City Search. And then came to Boingo, before it was called Boingo, back in 01.
If somebody had said to you in 2001, in 17, 16 years, Wi-Fi will be ubiquitous, we're going to have gizmos in our pockets that, you know, were more than took humankind to the moon, what would you have said?
Well, we expected everybody to be connected. We believed in the wireless internet would be a economy-changing, world-changing technology. Did we know that there was going to be this thing called the iPhone? Obviously not. No one knew that but Steve Jobs, right? But we did believe that the wireless internet would change everything. So to a certain degree, none of this surprises us. What's surprising is just how diverse the devices have become, how ubiquitous the devices have become, how dependent on them we've become. But we expected the wireless internet to change the world.
Do you worry about capacity? I mean, there are billions and billions of smartphones and laptops, and there's only X amount of spectrum.
So Wi-Fi is unlicensed spectrum, and there's a lot of unlicensed spectrum, and more is coming. The 5G spec is both licensed and unlicensed. So the FCC.
What does that mean? What's the difference?
So unlicensed spectrum is free for use. So Wi-Fi uses unlicensed spectrum. Licensed spectrum is typically bought from the government. So the FCC, the U.S. government, releases spectrum. The cellular carriers bid on that spectrum. So that's mostly what the cellular carriers use. 5G is cool because it's actually bringing licensed and unlicensed together.
How much do you worry about the FCC and things like net neutrality and regulation of your industry?
Yeah, we try to stay out of that. We're neutral host. So we let
Come on. Nobody's neutral about this.
Well, we're neutral host as a strategy, meaning we go to the venue and the venue's our partner. And then we bring the carriers onto those networks, right? So we let the big guys fight out those kind of issues. We try to stay neutral and in between. A company the size of Boingo playing in the world of the big four telecom carriers and the cable cos, we're not going to drive policy.
Well, so that's an interesting question, right? You have something, you serve like a billion people, right? That's
we
not
do.
Small.
Well, it's small in the context of the size companies that we both compete with and then partner with. You think about an AT&T, a Verizon, right, a Charter, a Cable.
Yeah.
I mean, these are huge companies compared to us.
Sounds a little bit like you're trying to slide under the radar.
Not trying to slide under the radar. Just we know our role in the ecosystem, and our role is neutral host, right? We don't pick favorites. When we build a network, we win the venue because we promise to bring all the carriers onto that network, so the big four communications carriers, and we're the best in the country at doing that.
We should be clear here. You know, whether somebody's got an AT&T phone or a you know, Verizon, whatever it is, they get into, you know, the Staples Center, they're good to go.
Yeah, so you walk into O'Hare International Airport, one of our long-term venue contracts. We have all four carriers on the DAS network there. So when you get out of the taxi, you're down to one bar and you walk into O'Hare, your phone now goes up to 5 bars. That's because your phone's no longer connected to the nearest tower. It's actually connected to the DAS network within O'Hare. We built it, we operate that, and then we bring the other carriers onto it.
The buzzword here is small cell technology, right?
That's correct.
Give me the layman's definition.
So small cell technology is an extension of what we've been doing in the DAS business. So the distributed antenna system.
You're all jargony on me, man.
I know. I'm sorry.
It is
that industry. So they're cellular extension networks, but using much literally smaller technology and cheaper technology to achieve better coverage and more bandwidth for any application you're running. So what small cell allows us to do is we can now go to venues where maybe a DAS network was too expensive to deploy for a carrier. So we can get more types of venues with better coverage because of less expensive technology. It's cheaper, better, faster. Think about it.
What's your worst nightmare? What keeps you up at night?
What's my worst nightmare?
Yeah.
Being interviewed on TV. So I'm happy this
well,
is a radio.
This is a radio
interview. No, our business is complex. For the size company that we are, we have a lot of complexity in our business. And so execution is a challenge, right? We're at any given point in time, we're building 100 networks around the U.S. and to a certain degree around the world. And so managing 100 projects in any given time, there's a lot that can go wrong. So the ability to continue to execute as we grow the business and do more and more of these network builds, that's the biggest challenge we have.
The network builds, are they a hardware challenge or are they a software challenge?
It's really a design, build challenge and then manage challenge. So hardware is the easy part.
Yeah.
The hardware is all standard Wi-Fi compliant. The devices are all Wi-Fi compliant. So it's not about hardware. It's designing the network for the specifics of the venue and the number of people that are going to be in there and what they're going to be doing with the network. So making sure the capacity at an individual smartphone level is there.
When you saw the iPhone hit, did you look at it and go, oh man, our problems just multiplied like tenfold?
No, we saw it as an amazing opportunity.
Really?
Because we had been talking about Wi-Fi chips coming to phones for about a decade, right? So the BlackBerry was the dominant phone, but Nokia actually was the first phone with a Wi-Fi chip in it. And we did a deal with them where our little software app went into the first Wi-Fi Nokia phone back in probably 2004. And so that phone didn't go very fast. And we were always having these conversations in board meetings about, well, Wi-Fi chips and phones is going to change everything because the number of devices now will, you know, exponentially multiply. And we literally had board members who were like, why would I want the internet in my phone? Why do I need a Wi-Fi chip in my phone? Right?
Yeah.
So we went from there to the iPhone launching in 2007. And literally that changed everything. Everybody then saw, oh, the power of the internet in my hand is an amazing thing. So we saw it as a multiplier of our business, not just laptops anymore, but all sorts of different devices. And now the vast majority of the traffic on our network is mobile device, not laptop.
Yeah, give me some sense. Do you know off the top of your head, like how vast?
The majority? Closing on 90%.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
This is a little sideways, but it's earnings week for you. I don't want to ask you about financials, obviously, because you'll say I can't talk about that. But you were running this company as a private company and now as a public enterprise.
Yes.
What's that transition like for the guy running the company?
Well, the simple way to I describe an IPO, which we did in May 2011, it's a financing event, right? So we went from having venture capitalists as our backers and our largest shareholders and trading them out, right? They've made their money. They did their job. They got us through to being a public company and bringing in institutional shareholders. So high level, simplistically speaking, it's a financing event. It's been great for the company. It gives us credibility that we didn't have as a venture-backed company. No one knows how big a venture-backed company is. No one knows the financials. No one knows if they're going to be here tomorrow because there's a lot of chaos, right, in the startup industry. So the ability to go public was a major milestone for the company and took our brand and our company up to a new level.
What about you as the guy running the shop day to day?
Well, it has its moments. But in general, we have amazing relationships with our institutional investors. We still have institutional investors that have been here since our IPO in 2011. And those are the kind of investors we want to attract. And we spend a lot of time, our CFO and I spend a lot of time talking to investors. We're always on... we're going to conferences, talking to institutional investors. And as we grow in market cap, value, overall value of the company, it's a new opportunity to remarket us as a company to new shareholders, right? We always want to keep moving up the scale. We want more larger, long-term holding institutional shareholders. So as we've been successful in the company, as our market capitalization has increased, it gives us access to new and larger investors, which is great.
Mm-hmm. As you think about this industry and about internet and technology writ large in this economy, is there a company out there, is there a CEO that you look at and you say, that person is doing it totally right?
You mean just within our industry or what
in the innovation space, right? Because you guys are having a challenge every day.
I was, like many people, I was a Steve Jobs fan. I've been a fan of Howard Schultz for many years. Starbucks, you don't think of that as a technology business, but if you look at how it's evolved over time, they've actually done quite a bit of technology as of part of that business. So I appreciate anyone who is trying to continue to grow their business through innovation and not relying on just maintaining the status quo.
Look out another 15 years for me. In other words, basically as long as you've been at this company, and let's say you stick around another 15 years, what does this space look like?
So the device, I think, is going to change pretty dramatically. The phone, the smartphone, where could this possibly go? It's unbelievable, right? It's a supercomputer in our hand. And I think that's going to get distributed. So you're already seeing a little bit with the Apple Watch, right? Now you see wearables. Our CTO has a chip embedded into his wrist.
Really?
Yeah. So when he comes into the parking lot, he hangs out his hand and it opens the gate.
We have to go find it. We have to go track him down.
Man. Yeah. Well, you can't even see it.
Wow.
And so I think you're going to see... And this is probably a little scary for folks, but it's actually very natural, is all that capability in the smartphone is going to start getting distributed. So that may mean it's distributed in other elements, other devices that we carry. I think it's also going to be distributed within us. Within us, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
And it's going to be amazing.
Or terrifying, take your pick.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think if you talked about having a supercomputer in our hand 20 years ago, you go, well, how could that possibly be? Yeah. It'd weigh too much, right? We'd have to carry it on our back. Even then, that wouldn't work. So I think we find as innovation happens and as technology changes, it actually improves our life, and I think that'll continue to happen.
The reason I recoil at that question is I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and she says, Dad, when do I get a cell phone? And I say, sweetie, by the time you're ready for a cell phone, it's just going to be in a chip in our brains.
See?
And that's basically what you're saying.
Right? You've seen the future.
That was Dave Hagan, the CEO of Boingo, a company you have probably used, even if you didn't know it. If you like this episode, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a friend about us. It really does help. And let us know who you'd like to hear from next time. This episode of the Corner Office Podcast was produced by Bridget Bonder. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.